Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1986, Gene Bauer and Lori Houston came across a, quote, dead pile behind a stockyard in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They were documenting and investigating the conditions at a massive stockyard, which handled more than 300,000 animals a year. In this dead pile, Gene writes, quote, animals were left for the render, who would use their carcasses for animal feed, soap, and fertilizer. One day, as we were taking photos, revolted by the clump of rotting pigs, sheep, and cow, thick with buzzing maggots, one of the sheep lifted her head and looked right at us. She wasn't dead at all. Our jaws dropped and our hearts melted, end quote. That experience would become a defining moment in the history of Farm Sanctuary. It's a refuge for thousands of farm animals. Cows, pigs, chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, sheep, and goats. These animals will live free for the rest of their lives, never eaten or used for their milk or eggs. Gene Bauer and Lori Houston founded Farm Sanctuary in 1986. And since then, Gene has worked to stop the abuses of factory farming, and he promotes compassionate vegan living. A pioneer in the field of undercover investigations, Gene has visited hundreds of farms, stockyards, and slaughterhouses to document deplorable conditions. Gene Bauer is president of the Farm Sanctuary, and he joins me in studio to talk about his work and his new book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day. Hi, Gene. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose. It is great to be here. Thank you.
Well, it is so good to have you. I have visited the Farm Sanctuary in Orland a couple of years ago, and it was such an amazing experience because you can pet cows and pigs, and I'll never forget sitting down and a turkey sort of came up and started nuzzling my neck. And I learned that turkeys actually like to be hugged.
Turkeys are very friendly. They follow you around the farm like puppy dogs, and they will oftentimes like to cuddle. They'll sometimes get on your lap if you sit down in the barnyard. You know, these animals, like all animals, have feelings, they have memories, they develop relationships, and they want to be treated with kindness. There's no difference between a cat or a dog or a pig or a cow or a chicken or a turkey. They're all living, feeling creatures, and when we treat them with kindness, it's not only good for the animals, it's also good for us.
There's so much more information coming out now about the intelligence of these animals, especially pigs. A lot of people do not know how smart pigs actually are.
Yes. You know, they're as smart as like a 3 or 4 year old child. If you look into a pig's eye, it's a lot like a human's eye. Winston Churchill said that a dog looks up to people, a cat looks down to people, but a pig will look you straight in the eye. And I think there's something to that. They're very, very human in their behaviors.
I'm sure you, like all of us, didn't really know this about farm animals when you first started interacting with them.
That's right. Well, I grew up, like most people, eating meat, milk, and eggs without thinking about it. And as time went, though, and I learned about the harmful consequences of animal agriculture and the fact that I could live well without eating animals and I could become vegan, I went vegan in 1985 and then started investigating these places, finding living animals thrown in trash cans or on dead piles, started rescuing them. Now we have sanctuaries and just have gotten to know these animals over the years. And it's beautiful when people get a chance to come visit Farm Sanctuary and to connect with a cow or a pig or a sheep or a goat or a chicken or a turkey and just recognize that they are somebody. Mm. They are not something.
Tell us about that experience back in 1986 when you and Lori Houston came across what's called a dead pile behind a stockyard in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, we felt it was important to see firsthand what was happening. If we're going to work on these issues, we needed to know them very well. So started going to factory farms and stockyards and slaughterhouses. And Lancaster Stockyards at the time was the largest stockyard east of Chicago. So it was massive. Several acres, a bunch of holding pens where animals were kept, and then alleyways where they would be herded through. Sometimes these animals would come from hundreds of miles away. They were transported even from as far away as Texas to Pennsylvania to be sold. They'd be sold to other farms or often to slaughterhouses. And during this grueling transportation experience and the rough handling, these animals would often be injured. And it actually led to one of our campaigns to prevent the marketing of downed animals, animals too sick to walk, who were routinely being dragged onto trucks with chains, taken to slaughter, and used for human food. Also, many of the animals would die during this process, so they had a dead pile behind the facility. And so on this particular day in 1986, and it happened more than once, but this was the first time we came upon this dead pile, and there were dead sheep, dead pigs, dead cows. The maggots were so thick you could hear them buzzing. Mm-hmm. It was a hot August day. The smell was horrible. And off this pile, this sheep lifts her head. So we were stunned, and we assumed she probably had to be euthanized. So we brought her directly to a veterinarian who started examining her. And as he started poking around and checking her out, she perked up and then she stood up, and she ended up living with us for more than 10 years. So Hilda was Farm Sanctuary's first rescued animal, and since that time, we've rescued many others.
Wow. To think about what it was like in 1986 and how things have changed, because nowadays in the United States alone, how many animals are raised and killed for slaughter?
Well, in the U.S.
Or raised and killed for human consumption, I should say.
Yeah, well, in the U.S., we are – The highest number was about $10 billion a year, and that was about 10 years ago. The numbers are actually starting to go down, thankfully. And we're just talking here about land animals, by the way, not
right.
fish, because that's a whole other issue.
Right.
The numbers of land animals being killed are starting to go down. The number of fish is also seeming to be leveling off a little bit. And I think what is happening is people are recognizing that these are living, feeling creatures and that they're being treated horribly. People don't like it. And so they want alternatives. And hopefully people will eat more plants instead of animals. But unfortunately, there's this whole thing also, especially I understand in the Bay Area, where there's this push to promote the so-called, you know, humane treatment and then slaughter of animals. But if you think about it, the word humane and the word slaughter don't fit very well together. I think historically San Francisco has been a real leader. Lots of great vegan food and so on. I think, frankly, it's kind of fallen behind. There are other cities that are just rocking the vegan thing right now, and I'd love to see San Francisco get right back on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you brought up a bunch of points. What about that humane label? Because you're right, that has really taken off in the Bay Area.
Well, you know, oftentimes these labels tend to sound a lot better than they are. There is a vested interest on the part of the food producer to market things and to label them to sound really nice and really humane. But there's not adequate infrastructure or oversight to regulate these facilities. So, you know, in the case of free range, for example, you'll have animals whose bodies or eggs are being sold as free range, but all that's required is that these animals have access to the outdoors, which is not defined. So you can have animals raised by the thousands in a warehouse with a little door that goes to a crummy little paddock that they never use. And because that is access to the outdoors, that can be sold as free range. So a lot of times these labels are misleading, and consumers who mean well and who do not want to support cruelty are still supporting essentially factory farming conditions by buying free range products.
Because these animals are actually slaughtered at the same facilities, right?
That's a whole nother thing, yes. Usually these animals end up going to a typical USDA slaughter plant if they're going to be sold for human food. And often those are these massive factory farm slaughterhouses.
What has really changed when it comes to factory farms since you first came across that sheep in 1986? I think about the undercover investigations that come out almost every week from the Humane Society or Mercy for Animals. And that's why so many states are passing these ag gag laws that would prevent undercover investigators from getting this video, because once the video is once we have the video, it usually does end up on the nightly news.
No, that's very true. I think what is happening on farms today is outside the bounds of acceptable conduct in our society, according to most citizens. And agribusiness has been doing this for a long, long time, and they don't want people to see it. And so there's these ag gag laws, which are the most recent effort on the part of factory farming to prevent people from seeing what's happening. But it's not the first. You know, you may recall some years ago when Oprah was sued by the beef industry for talking about mad cow disease on her program. And there are also the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act that was passed in Washington, D.C. a number of years ago, also intended to silence critics of this animal agriculture business. But I think, you know, the bottom line is most people are humane. Most people don't like cruelty. And they're starting to pay attention. And as people pay attention and start making food choices that are more aligned with their own values, so instead of saying, don't tell me, I don't want to know, which is too often what people have said when the issue of animal agriculture has come up, people are now starting to pay attention and trying to make more mindful choices. Now, that can mean eating animal products from less bad situations, which, you know, in my view is not the best approach. Or it can mean eating more plants and fewer animal products. And, you know, I've been a vegan since 1985. I think that's the best decision for people to make. But I also recognize that each person has to make their own choices. Mm. So even eating less meat, doing a Meatless Mondays program, for example, I think is a very positive step in a good direction.
So full disclosure, my 20-year vegan anniversary is this summer.
Ooh, right on. That's so great.
And what you just said, I think, speaks to someone who just called and couldn't be on the line, but said, I cannot be vegan because my body can't handle beans and legumes. I eat 85% of veggies, but I also eat free-range chicken because my body needs it. I don't appreciate being considered non-compassionate because I'm not vegan.
Yeah, I mean, that's some people believe that. And, you know, I don't know what that experience is like to feel like you have to eat flesh to get the nutrients you need. If somebody has difficulty, though, with beans, there are other sources of protein that are very good. I mean, there's tofu, for instance. There's even protein in whole grain or in vegetables. You know, potatoes have protein. And the average American gets way more protein than they need. So this concern about getting enough protein is oftentimes not accurate. You know, we get more than we need in this country, in fact. And so, but I wish the caller well. And, you know, each of us has to make our own choices. We're all works in progress. And so eating less animal foods is definitely going in a positive direction.
It's kind of an amazing time right now, because when I became vegan 20 years ago, I didn't really know what to eat at that time. There weren't that many restaurants that served this kind of food. They didn't have aisles in grocery stores for even vegetarians. But now there's so much scientific data. There are a lot of vegan doctors now doing a lot of studies. There's the China study. The head of one of the cardiology associations in the country is vegan. So there's just so much new information out there right now.
It's never been a better time to be vegan. And there's also, I think, a convergence of issues. Not only are people unhappy about the cruelty these animals experience on factory farms, but they're recognizing that eating plants is healthy and it's actually good for us. And the issues involving environmental harm caused by animal agriculture are becoming much more resonant. And people are recognizing that, you know, to eat plants is much more efficient, requires far fewer resources. You know, today, the vast majority of the corn and soybeans grown in the U.S. is fed to farm animals. We could feed 10 times more people if we were eating the plants directly. So this is a system that puts enormous stress on our planet, and it doesn't have to be that way. You know, when I grew up, I didn't know any vegans. There are more and more vegans now, and we are social animals. We learn from those around us. So the more vegans there are, I think the more vegans there ultimately will be, you know, because we learn and you see, hey, you can do this. And if you can live well without causing unnecessary harm, why wouldn't you? And I think most people would tend to agree that that kind of makes sense. But also we're emotional animals and we have attachments to things and we have habits. And so change happens over time. But, you know, for me, being vegan is an aspiration to live as kindly as possible. It's not an end point, and it's something that continues day after day.
Gene Bauer is president of Farm Sanctuary. There is a sanctuary in New York and in Orland and in Los Angeles.
That's correct. In Acton, California, just north of Los Angeles is our third.
And the one in Orland is about, 2.5 hours from here?
That's right. Two and a half hours from San Francisco.
And if you go to a farm sanctuary, you can interact with the animals there, goats, pigs, cows, turkeys. These animals will live freely for the rest of their lives. They'll never be eaten or used for their milk and eggs. And Gene is out with a new book, Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day. And there's great stories in here about rescued animals, great photos, and then there's also a lot of recipes. So if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments for Gene, if you have any stories about interacting with animals, what do you think about farm sanctuaries? There's actually going to be a new one opening in Petaluma, and we will be joined by one of the founders of the Flipside Sanctuary in about 30 minutes, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. If your relationship with animals has changed over the years, we'd love to hear from you. So let's talk a little bit about cows. Tell us about some of the cows on your farm, and what are we learning about cows?
Well, cows, like other farm animals, are very social. They learn from those around them. One of the first cows we rescued, or calves I rescued, was Opie, and he was left for dead at a stockyard. He had actually been sent there on the day he was born, because he was born on a dairy farm, and dairy farms don't want the males because they don't produce milk. So he was basically left to die, and I brought him back to Farm Sanctuary, nursed him back to health, but he really wasn't thriving until I brought him out to the cow barn and put him in a pen there, and the other cows came and circled around him and started mooing to him. He started mooing back. He knew he was with his people and in a safe place, so he responded in a very positive way to this cow company and the social environment that they created around him. So cows are social animals. And they have memories. We just rescued a bull, in fact, from New York City. He escaped from a slaughterhouse because he was terrified, and he made a run for it. And
this is the bull that was running down the street and ended up at, I think, a community college?
That's right.
Right?
He was looking for the only grass he could find in New York City, and it was a college or a school. And so he was there and found that grass. But then he ended up going to the local animal control. And John Stewart and Tracy Stewart, who are supporters of Farm Sanctuary and involved very much with our organization, helped to usher him to our farm in Watkins Glen, New York. And he's just arrived. He is becoming more comfortable there. But you know, these are animals that have experienced horrible cruelty in the past. And when humans have approached them, it's usually been a painful experience. So it takes a while sometimes for them to learn that they're in a safe place, to begin to trust us. And that's what Frank, this animal, is now starting to experience at Farm Sanctuary. And just like all of us, they change, they learn, you know, and we are products of our genetics, but we're also products very much of our experience.
You also tell the story of Sweetie, a blind cow who started her life at a Canadian dairy farm where she was kept on a concrete floor inside a bleak industrial building with no access to the outdoors. Once she was old enough to be impregnated, she entered production, and like all dairy cows, she endured an unrelenting cycle of insemination, pregnancy, and birth. Because in order to produce milk, dairy cows are forced to have a calf every year. A lot of people don't know about this process.
That is so true. You know, cows, like other mammals, produce milk for their babies. And so on dairy farms, cows have a calf every year. The calf is taken away immediately at birth, which is a traumatic experience both for the mother and the baby. And then the mother goes into the milk stream and produces about 10 times more milk than she would in nature. And their bodies are under intense stress, not only because they're producing so much milk, but because they're pregnant during most of their lactation cycle. In a healthy environment, a cow could live 20 years, but on these factory farms and these milk production facilities, cows are sent to slaughter after just about 3 years in production. They're pushed so hard.
How has that changed since 1986? Is it safe to assume that animals were probably treated a little bit better back then because they weren't given so many antibiotics, they weren't forced to grow so large like they are now, because production now is just so fast.
Yeah, I'd say it's gotten worse. You know, these animals just keep getting pushed harder and harder. The dairy herd, the national dairy herd, has become fewer. There's fewer cows, but they're still producing as much or more milk. So each animal is pushed harder, and their suffering is enhanced and increased because of that. But there's also this push towards smaller so-called humane farms. So we have kind of a bimodal system here now but the factory farm is still dominant. And even the ones that call themselves humane are essentially factory farms.
And so tell us more about the dairy industry, because now you are seeing the, what is it called for milk? I don't think it's called humane milk, but it's
Well, you know, I think
grass-fed cows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, in whatever the case is, you know, if animals are being exploited and seen primarily as production units, and this is the case on so-called humane farms as well, there's a tendency for them to suffer and for their owners to not treat them with very much respect. And so, you know, the factory farming industry is continuing to expand. It is still dominant. And I think a lot of these labels like grass-fed and so on really are more marketing terms than they are descriptions of the reality of the production techniques. So, and it's because consumers don't want this cruelty. But producers, you know, there's not very many that are taking very good care of their animals. I mean, that's the whole other thing. There's such a strong demand for alternatives now. And there's not many farmers that treat animals very well at all. So animals that are treated a little less badly, but still are essentially in factory farms where they're overcrowded, where they're mutilated, where in the case of dairy cows, their calves are taken away on a regular basis, and they experience that stress and turmoil, then those products are being sold as humane. So those terms, you know, and grass-fed and so on, sound better than they are. And consumers who mean well are being misled.
What about the small farmers?
Well, you know, sometimes these small farmers, you know, can treat the animals better, you know, but there's very few of them. And relative to the amount of meat people are eating and the demand for alternatives to factory farmed meat, they're not able to even come close to supplying that. And so as a result, the majority of meat sold as, you know, humane and grass-fed and so on is coming from factory farms.
Hey, let's take a call before we go to break. Let's hear from Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. This information is extremely interesting and valuable. Thank you. And I know, Rose, this is a topic close to your heart. And I have a question about eggs. And it seems to me to be different from a lot of these other things. And, you know, if I can just set up a question where we assume the best possible circumstance, happy chickens, you know, living in somebody's backyard, pet chickens, and then they lay eggs. Why is it wrong to eat the eggs?
Yeah, well, to me, it all boils down to the relationship. And is the relationship mutually beneficial? In the case of chickens, you know, right now there is this push for backyard chicken flocks, and sometimes people will order them in the mail, and during that process, many die. Also, at hatcheries that hatch out egg-laying hens, you have males and females, and the males are typically just killed right after they hatch. So there's that issue to contend with. And if the hens are being seen and used primarily as egg producers, when they're no longer producing eggs, they will be killed, most likely. So that, to me, is not mutually beneficial. Now, if somebody were to rescue hens from, say, a battery cage operation and gave them a good life, and those hens are living a good life, and they are first and foremost friends, not food, and they're laying eggs, it's hard to say why ethically that's problematic. You know, at Farm Sanctuary, we have hens who lay eggs. And we actually don't eat the eggs because we don't want to set the example. And what we do with the eggs is we hard boil them and give them to cats and dogs and also to the hens, because hens in industrial production are producing about 270 eggs per year each. This is an intense drain on their bodies. They lay 30 times the weight of their skeletons in calcium in the form of eggshells. And so they have horrible osteoporosis after being in these egg factories for a year or two. So for the hens that come to Farm Sanctuary, by feeding them the hard-boiled eggs, they actually get some of those nutrients back. But you know, again, to me, it boils down to the relationship. Is it mutually beneficial? And if so, then I think that's fine.
Well, thank you for calling in, Mark. And we'd love to hear from you if you have any questions for Gene Bauer, president of the Farm Sanctuary. His new book is Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day. If you have any questions about how animals are treated, we'd love to hear from you. If you have stories about maybe how your views about animals and the food we eat has changed over the years, give us a call. There's also going to be a new farm sanctuary opening in Petaluma called the Flipside Sanctuary, and Cindy Holm, co-founder of that, will join us in about 15 minutes, so we hope you can stay tuned for that. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is always better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. Toll free, 866-798-TALK. If you'd like to, if you prefer to write rather than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say. And then at noon today, Bina. This is KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a special Your Call. We'll be joined by our colleague and friend, Joe Burke, who, as you know by now, is retiring after working at KALW for 28 years. We will ask Joe to share his most memorable moments on the air. We'll also talk about the changes that he's seen in the radio and music industries over the years. So if you have any questions for Joe, I hope you can join us at 10. You can also email your questions, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you have questions for today's guest, Gene Bauer, who is president of Farm Sanctuary, I hope you can check out the farm in Orland, California. It's about 2.5 hours from San Francisco. You will meet a lot of animals there, chickens, cows, pigs, ducks, turkeys, goats. These animals will live free for the rest of their lives, never eaten or used for their milk or their eggs. Gene and Lori Houston founded Farm Sanctuary back in 1986. And if you have any questions for Gene about his farm, about his relationship with animals, about the changes that he has seen over the years, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And I know that eating is a very personal issue, so this is not, we're not going to judge anybody. All questions we'd like to put on the table. So if you have any questions for Gene about animals and how they're treated and how he came to his decisions, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We talked a little bit about pigs earlier, but tell us more about pigs, because some of the pig slaughterhouses in North Carolina are now processing one pig every second. And Smithfield slaughters about 32,000 pigs every day. I mean, it's really hard to comprehend these numbers.
Yeah.
And we don't hear them on a regular basis.
No, not at all. And, you know, one thing to realize, too, is that these are individuals. You know, when you look at these numbers and when you talk about over 9 billion farm animals slaughtered every year in the U.S., something we kind of fail to really grasp is that this is one after another. Each is an individual. Each has their own life experience and doesn't want to suffer, doesn't want to be mistreated the way they are. And when they're moved through these facilities that quickly, they're handled very harshly. It's a very ugly, violent, stressful place for the workers as well, who will sometimes take out their frustrations on the animals, and they will beat them, and they will treat them with egregious sadistic cruelty in some cases. So, you know, slaughterhouses are violent places, mm-hmm. and it does something to people. You know, we are very much influenced by our social environment, and when you're at a slaughterhouse, there it's just filled with ugliness, and it's horrible.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the slaughterhouse workers don't really have a voice, and they are living, for the most part, in poverty. Most are undocumented, and so they're exploited. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, no, this is a bad industry for animals and also for people. It's an exploitive industry. It's an extractive mindset where it's not mutually beneficial, where you have these slaughterhouses and they depend on certain workers to do certain things that are horrible. They have a very high turnover rate, high injury rate, and sometimes, you know, these people are injured, you know, not only physically but emotionally. And There have been links between violence to animals and violence to people. You know, spouses are sometimes the victims as well as the animals. Alcohol and other, substances are abused. In environments where you have factory farms and slaughterhouses, you often also have serious social problems. So it's part of this whole kind of slate of problems. And violence creates more violence, essentially. And so, you know, what I dream about is a different kind of world where instead of killing animals, we have a diverse plant-based, community-based farming situations in rural, suburban, and urban settings. And we're starting to see some really good things along those lines now.
Tell us about some of them.
Well, you know, there's teachers that are working with kids to grow food in schools. Mm-hmm. There's this place in New York City, for example, in the Bronx, where this teacher started bringing in seeds and the kids started really turning on to it, you know. They used to have something like 40% attendance in the school. Now they have over 90% attendance in the school. And these kids are now growing healthy plant foods, not only at their own school, but they're now starting little businesses and doing this in other parts of New York. They're doing urban landscaping. They're doing rooftop gardens in the Hamptons. And it's so exciting to see these school kids who did not have opportunities and didn't really have a lot of hope actually given both. And it's through living well, it's through eating plants instead of animals, it's through getting closer to nature, it's through getting your hands in the soil. It's a beautiful thing to see. And there are also programs for people coming back from the wars that, you know, we are involved in around the world. And that's also a traumatic experience. And so when people come back, I think the USDA is actually putting in some programs to encourage veterans to start farming, which is another very positive thing. Again, as long as they're growing plants, not animals, because animals is more killing, you know, if they're slaughtering them.
Right. There's an amazing also farm in near the Los Angeles area called the Gentle Barn. And what they do is connect formerly abused animals with formerly abused children. And they bring in children to this farm who have a really hard time trusting humans for obvious reasons. But once they're around the animals, they say they just change. They light up. And in many cases, they end up working at the Gentle Barn because it's such a profound experience.
You know, kindness to animals is also good for us. It's healing.
Right.
You know, in fact, when Farm Sanctuary started, we were spending a lot of time seeing horror at factory farms. Being able to rescue the animals helped to heal us as well as healing the animals. And being in that kind of environment is very nurturing. It's very positive. It's very inspiring. And, yeah, that's what sanctuaries do.
Gene Bauer is co-founder of The Farm Sanctuary. His latest book is Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. And let's hear from Michelle in Oakland. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering if your guest knows anything about the horses that are kept perpetually pregnant to produce estrogen. It's something I heard about.
Yes, Premarin. It's pregnant mare urine, and these horses are kept pregnant in order for their urine to be collected and this pharmaceutical produced. And they suffer, just like other animals who are seen as commodities and as production units. So that is certainly an industry that we are concerned about. It's not something that Farm Sanctuary specifically has worked a lot on. We focus primarily on animals who are exploited for food. But, you know, horses also sometimes are slaughtered for food. And I've actually been to horse slaughterhouses. So violence is violence, cruelty is cruelty. And the good news is we don't need to be part of it. You know, we can eat foods that help heal us. You know, like it's been said, let food be thy medicine. And some of the pharmaceuticals that have become normal in our society, we don't need if we eat well. It's been estimated we could save 70% on healthcare costs by shifting to a whole foods plant-based diet. 70%. So some of these pharmaceuticals that are being created are things that we actually don't even need if we prevent these problems, which can be prevented by eating a whole foods plant-based diet.
And as one doctor in your book, his name escapes me, he said that during medical training, you get absolutely no nutrition information. You don't take classes on nutrition, which really doesn't make any sense.
It's insane that doctors do not understand nutrition and how food can actually prevent so many diseases. But they're looped into the pharmaceutical business, and you know the routine is just to prescribe drugs, and it's profitable and it's easy. But thankfully, there are more doctors now that are starting to think about this and they're having very good results by giving people actually prescriptions for plant foods instead of drugs. There's a doctor in Texas that actually does that. He writes prescriptions for vegetables. So there's movement, and thankfully doctors are now starting to figure this out.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Oliver in San Francisco. Hi, Oliver. Welcome to the show. Hello, Oliver. Let's try Michelle in Oakland. Oh, hi, Oliver. Go ahead.
All right. I was wondering, do you guys have cats and dogs on your farm?
Yes, there are cats and dogs that live on the farm.
And then what do you guys feed them?
Now, dogs can be vegan, so that's not difficult. Cats, it's a much more difficult situation. So we will sometimes feed them the eggs from the chickens, but, you know, there are sometimes they're fed meat as well. And so it is one of those dilemmas, and there's no easy answer.
All right. Thank you for calling, Oliver. Let's go next to Michelle in Oakland. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. So I totally support the vegan movement, and I love everything you're doing, Jean, and I totally support it. And I rescued a couple of chihuahuas a few years ago. It was either a chihuahua or a pit bull. And I have to agree with you that saving an animal's life heals you. It really has changed my life. But I did want to add a little bit of information, which is that, you know, there was a caller earlier who had stated that she tried very hard to be vegan and she still just felt like she needed to eat chicken or something. And you responded kindly, but at the end of it you said, well, you know, you need to recognize that we're all works in progress. Like, maybe someday you can do better. And what I wanted to add to that was, I'm educated in Ayurveda. I'm a student of Ayurveda. And it actually, when you talk about doctors writing prescriptions for plants, actually some Ayurvedic doctors, it is a prescription sometimes to eat meat. The Dalai Lama, who is the personification, I think most people would agree, of compassion, eats meat. And the reason he does this is because his bodily constitution is not sustained healthfully without the very specific mixture of amino acids and oils and protein, of course. But the other things are just essential for him to maintain health, especially since he travels so much. And, you know, what it comes down is to needing grounding. And I just want to add that, you know, while I support definitely, you know, reduction in the consumption and manufacturing and, you know, factory farming of meat and stuff like that, there are some people that just necessarily need it to be healthy. And I hope there can be an understanding and an acceptance of that.
Well, you know, I can't speak to others' experiences, of course. You know, I've been vegan since 1985 and it's worked very well, but other people maybe have different experiences, and, you know, we need to respect that and just encourage people to continuously, you know, aspire to live as kindly as possible. That's, to me, what being vegan's about.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Michelle. Let's go next to Amanda calling from New York. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the show.
Wonderful show. And I wanted to say that I was privileged enough to visit the farm sanctuary in upstate New York, and this follows perfectly the comment about the Dalai Lama, because he has a monastery in that area, and he was visiting, and the farm sanctuary did a blessing of the animals, and he sent his top monk there to do the blessing. And they have a very big barn. They brought all the animals from the sanctuary in, who are very calm and peaceful. But the community was invited as well. And they brought dogs and cats and goats and sheep. And those animals were so anxious because they weren't used to the peacefulness that the farm sanctuary animals were. And the monk came in with several other monks, and they began to chant. And every single animal there calmed down. It was the most incredible experience.
That's beautiful. Yeah, calm and kind and compassion can be contagious, and it's beautiful to see that happen.
You have some great stories in your book, Jean, about animals who are sick, for example, and then other animals come to give them some comfort, or if an animal passes, animals will come and stay for days to say goodbye. I mean, they're just amazing stories.
Yes, animals will grieve when they lose a friend. They will also help each other. You know, they will heal each other and support each other and even protect each other in some cases. So, no, these are social animals just like cats or dogs or people, and they can their lives can be very inspiring if we pay attention, which is a big part of what it's about. It's looking into their eyes, recognizing that there is someone there, that they are someone, not something. And at Farm Sanctuary, they are our friends, not our food.
Gene Bauer is president of Farm Sanctuary and author of the book Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. And now I would like to welcome Cindy Holm to the show. Cindy is co-founder and director of the Flipside Sanctuary. This is a brand new farm sanctuary in Petaluma. Hi, Cindy. Welcome
Hi,
to the show.
Rose. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as someone who's from Petaluma, I was really excited to hear about this farm sanctuary. So tell us, I understand that you're going to be offering visitor tours in the next couple of months?
Yes, we're hoping to be able to have tours by the summer, hoping for volunteers within the next month or so.
And how did you start Flipside Sanctuary? Tell us the story behind it.
Well, we started, I've been a RVT working with animals for 18 years. My husband is a carpenter, and we've rescued animals for a long time. And we rescued a goat, Milton, who was tossed over the fence at a dairy farm. And we adopted him, and we were friends with him, and we loved him. And we also adopted a chicken from a factory farm who would, like, sit on my lap as I read in the yard. And these two animals really changed the way that I looked at animals that are raised for food.
And tell us more about this goat, because we've been talking about cows and the dairy industry, but we haven't been talking about goats. Tell us more about that.
So Milton, the males especially are just byproducts of the dairy industry for goats. And Milton was actually thrown over the fence just as waste. And a good Samaritan found him, and he had a litter mate who didn't survive. But, you know, it's the same thing in the goat industry that, you know, they have to take the babies away from their moms to get the milk. And it's sad. I know some of the goat farmers are trying to adopt them out, but there's just, you know, it's just a byproduct of the milk industry.
And how big is the goat industry in California, because the dairy industry, it's the number one state for dairy.
Right. There is a lot of goat dairies in the area, and, you know, goats are also raised for meat in this area, too.
And what other animals do you have at Flipside?
We have cows, chickens, pigs, turkeys, and goats, of course.
And can you talk just quickly about how this has changed your life? Because I understand that your husband recently became vegan, and he never thought he would be in this place.
Oh, no. My husband, well, both of us actually were huge meat eaters. My husband's favorite drink was milk, still is, just rice milk now. And I never thought he would change. And I became a vegetarian first for about a year and just started investigating. And I must say that Gene Bauer has been a huge inspiration. Farm Sanctuary has been a huge inspiration, has taught us so much. And I just, you know, it was like a light switch that just something changed in me where I couldn't be a part of that anymore. And I showed my husband just a 4-minute video, and he changed overnight. I never thought it would happen, and he was just like, that's it. And he became vegan, straight to vegan overnight.
That's amazing. That's so wonderful to hear. And it really speaks to how we each affect and influence those around us and how we can have a positive influence. So I'm very, very happy to hear about that.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for calling in. And I really look forward to visiting your sanctuary. It's so exciting to think that a sanctuary is only an hour now from San Francisco.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Cindy Holm. She's co-founder and director of Flipside Sanctuary, a new sanctuary that will be opening in Petaluma in the summer. And Gene, we're seeing a lot of smaller farm sanctuaries opening across the country.
Yes, there's a whole movement now where people want to reshape our relationship with these other animals, want to spend time with them and enjoy their company. And so I think we're in the midst now of a food movement and kind of a reevaluation of what our place is on the planet. I mean, as fundamental as that. And, you know, we grow up in a certain way with certain habits. And just because we have habits like eating animals doesn't mean that they're good habits or that we should continue with them. Over the course of human history, there have been a number of institutions and sort of belief systems that were assumed to be normal. You know, slavery, for example, was argued to be the way things are supposed to be, or women shouldn't be allowed to vote because, well, that's just the way it's supposed to be. And those are just ridiculous opinions now that we recognize as unhealthy and unenlightened. And the way we treat other animals also says a lot about who we are. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said that the moral progress of a nation could be judged by the way animals are treated. And animals who we exploit in the food industry are so much at our mercy. And when we treat them with disregard the way that has become common, it says a lot about us. And I don't think people feel good about it. And people are now looking for alternatives. And the farm sanctuary movement is part of that.
Well, we have time for a few more calls. We're speaking with Jean Bauer, co-founder of the Farm Sanctuary and author of Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. Let's hear from Morgan calling from Ashland, Oregon. Hi, Morgan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a small organic farmer in Ashland, Oregon here. And I've been listening to your show. I think it's great that, you know, everyone can eat what they want, and I totally support the vegan diet and the idea of it. What I kind of am on the opinion of is not so much what we're eating, but how we're producing it. So, you know, I have sheep that we butcher on our property, and I have a local farmer that raises pigs for us, and we have a nice community here that is networking due to that. But, you know, if you're on a vegetarian side of it or a vegan side of it, you can still be doing just as much detrimental damage to the environment and to yourself if you're not eating either organic or locally, I guess, due to herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers that are being pumped all over the place. So I'd just like to have that opinion put out there and a little more support for the small organic farmers that are out there like my family and I.
Yeah, and I'm a big supporter of small, local, organic farmers. I'm a big supporter of community-oriented food systems, you know, like you described there. You know, the one area that, you know, obviously we would diverge on is, you know, the idea of you know, getting to know a sheep or a pig and then killing them. And so that – but we're totally on the same page with the rest of it.
Well, thank you for calling in, Morgan. I mean, when you're talking about these massive industries and these massive corporations like Tyson, for example, a new study by Environment America shows that Tyson is actually dumping more pollution into surface water than ExxonMobil.
Horrible. I mean, this industry is one of the most harmful on our planet. The United Nations even put out a report talking about how animal agriculture contributes more to climate change than the entire transportation industry. It's responsible for a loss of biodiversity, responsible for the squandering of scarce resources like water, fossil fuels. New York Times article a few years back talked about, compared the amount of fossil fuels needed for a meat meal versus a vegetarian meal. They found it took 16 times more fossil fuels for the meat meal. So this is an industry that is causing enormous harm and stress to our planet. And the good news, though, is by making different kinds of food choices and being more mindful and eating plants and supporting organic local farms instead of supporting these industrial operations and animal agriculture, we can make a huge difference. And it's starting to happen. We're in the midst now of this burgeoning food movement.
Well, thank you for calling in, Morgan. Let's go next to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I kind of wanted to end on a happy animal story. I mean, these aren't farm animals, but these are pet rats, and I know people really really say negative things about rats, but rats are wonderful animals and make terrific pets. And I was taking care of my daughter's two rats over Christmas one time, and one of the rats started choking, and I thought, oh my God, we're going to lose this poor rat, you know, my daughter's rat. And the other rat, they had lived together for a couple years, the other rat started licking her and petting her and taking care of her, and she survived. She stopped choking, and I mean, it was just, I would never have believed it if I hadn't seen it myself. And so, you know, all kinds of animals are just wonderful, and they love each other. And and anyways, that's my great rat story.
Well, that is a lovely rat story. Gene actually has a rat story in the book.
I sure do, yes. And you know, these are intelligent creatures as well. And, you know, sometimes, you know, in our country and in society, there are prejudices. And, you know, rats are the victims of prejudice and then discrimination, just like farm animals are and different people are from time to time. So, yeah, thank you very much for sharing that story and allowing people to think about these rats as living, feeling creatures who are personalities.
Thank you, Nancy. We've got time for one more caller. Let's hear from Ramin in Oakland. No, Ramin. Okay, Ramin wanted to say that factory farming takes up a lot of energy and is very bad for the environment.
Absolutely it is. You know, we could feed far more people with fewer resources by eating plant foods instead of animal foods and supporting local farms and, you know, voting with our dollars every day in terms of what we eat can make a huge difference. So that's where we can be empowered. You know, so there are many things in this world that are outside of our control, but when it comes to what we decide to eat, we have a lot of control over that and we can make a big difference.
Where do you see this movement going at a time when there is so much awareness raising, but the population is exploding? Mm. And in many countries, demand for animal products is on the rise.
Yes. It's concerning. It's very concerning that you have increasing meat consumption in places like China and India, for example. You know, but in the U.S., we still eat far more meat per capita than people in other countries.
Right.
So we still need to focus on our own issues. There are activists in other countries that are starting to address this, thankfully. But I think the way things are starting to go is that there's this factory farming industry that is continuing to try to push its way forward, but there is also a alternative approach, community-based farming, farmers markets, community-supported agriculture programs, community gardens. There's a food, not lawns movement. There's urban gardening. And there are also entrepreneurs now starting to invest in plant-based businesses. There's one company here in the Bay Area called Hampton Creek, for instance, that makes a vegan mayonnaise. And they were sued by Hellman's, who eventually dropped the lawsuit. And then the FDA came after them. And then FDA settled with Hampton Creek. And then eventually Hellman's came forward with a vegan mayonnaise. So
there's a vegan butcher shop over in Berkeley that just opened.
And it's all vegan.
Right.
Beautiful. So you have these kinds of entrepreneurs now creating unique and interesting new plant-based businesses. So I think that's the direction things are going.
And are you connecting with people in the climate action movement?
Yes, absolutely. This is a huge climate issue. Animal agriculture is a bigger contributor to climate change than all of transportation. So yes, that's a very important link there.
Gene Bauer is president of Farm Sanctuary and author of Living the Farm Sanctuary Life, The Ultimate Guide to Eating Mindfully, Living Longer, and Feeling Better Every Day. Gene is on the cover of this book surrounded by running sheep.
That's right, at our farm at the sanctuary.
And I hope you can check out the videos at Farm Sanctuary. The videos of the jumping goats are some of my favorite.
So fun. It's so joyful.
They're so happy to feel grass and just jump for joy.
They're enjoying their life like we all want.
Gene, thank you for your work and thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll be joined by our colleague and friend, Joe Burke, who's retiring after working at KALW for 28 years. We'll ask Joe to share his most memorable moments on the air and the changes he's seen in the radio and music industries over the years. What questions do you have for Joe Burke? Join us as we wish a warm send-off to Joe on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.